Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. The Boston Marathon bomber has been convicted, and we'll tell you about his radical ties to San Diego and East County. Another police shooting is making national news, but this time a police officer will be standing trial for murder. And here in East County, fire officials are voicing concerns about reservoirs running low and what that means for firefighting. In Santee, the sheriff seeks public help to find a pistol-packing robber who remains at large. And also on Crime Beat, hear about a Craigslist date that left an elderly college-area man in shock, literally. We'll have the findings of a new study on women in poverty and how equal pay for women could help level the playing field for poor women and their families. Federal taxes are due April 15th, but taxpayers seeking help from the IRS are finding mostly frustration instead. Find out why on today's show. Our newsmaker interview today is with Megan Hamilton from the Surf Rider Foundation, and she'll be giving you some tips on how to save water in this drought and create a water-wise landscaping for your home. Ed Barana will have news about a Home Start program that's offering a helping hand to prevent homelessness. April is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we will have some resources for those in need of help to escape violence in the home. A major event for book lovers will be held this weekend in La Mesa, featuring many prominent local authors and one with national fame. Plus, on Destination East County, we'll tell you about festivals and events coming up across our region, from Lakeside's Rodeo to a Taste of Julian culinary tour and much more. Learn about a county program to stop serial inebriates. And on Tribal Beat, hear why some Native Americans are opposing the Vatican's plan to declare Father Junipero Serra a saint. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. A jury has found Jokar Sarnef guilty on all 30 counts related to the Boston Marathon bombings in 2013. Sarnef could face the death penalty for the crimes, which killed three and wounded 264 other victims, the Boston Globe reports. The defendant carried out the horrific crimes with his brother, Tamerlan, who died after being shot in a gun battle with police and run over. The defense argued that Sarnef was unduly influenced by his older brother, but the prosecutor told jurors this was intentional. It was bloodthirsty. Sarnef told authorities that he and his brother became radicalized in part by watching videos made by Anwar al-Awlaki, the Wall Street Journal reports. Awlaki was a Muslim cleric at a mosque on the boundary of San Diego and La Mesa, right here in East County. He also attended school at San Diego State University. He was believed by authorities to be a mastermind behind the 9/11 attacks and other terrorist actions before he was killed by a U.S. drone in Yemen recently. The dual bombings during the Boston Marathon hit home for local runners, including participants in the Boston Marathon race from San Diego as well as La Mesa, El Cajon, Alpine, Lakeside, and Ramona in East County. Ramona resident Steve Talley crossed the finish line just moments before the bombs exploded. Sarnef was convicted on all charges, including conspiracy and using a weapon of mass destruction resulting in death. He showed no emotion during the reading of the verdict, according to WBUR-TV in Boston. The jury deliberated for 11 hours before reaching a decision. The sentencing phase of the trial will be next week. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Black Lives Matter, and all lives matter. Those are the cries of chanting protesters after another officer-involved shooting in which a white police officer shot to death an unarmed black man, USA Today reports. The incident occurred in South Carolina on Saturday, April 4th. 33-year-old North Charleston police officer Michael Slager shot 50-year-old Walter Scott, killing him. Initially, the officer claimed to have felt threatened after the suspect allegedly reached for his taser. However, cell phone video emerged showing clear and graphic images of Scott fleeing from the officer as Slager fires 8 rounds into the man's back. Unlike previous similar cases of the deaths of black men at the hands of white officers, such as in Ferguson, Missouri and New York, the reaction from the city of Charleston has been swift. Slager has been taken into custody, without bail, and charged with murder. He has been fired from the police force, however his wife, who is 8 months pregnant, will continue to receive health benefits. Walter Scott had been pulled over for a broken taillight. According to the victim's family, Scott may have tried to flee the officer for fear he would be incarcerated over his failure to pay child support. He had served 2 years in the Coast Guard and had 4 children. Protesters gathered in front of City Hall to make their voices heard regarding race relations with police as well as abuse of power by law enforcement overall. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Ed Barena.
The drought is shrinking ponds and lakes across East County, and CAL FIRE is concerned about the loss of water for fighting fires. CAL FIRE Captain Kendall Bortiser told 10 News, "We're extremely concerned." He said CAL FIRE has been mapping the backcountry, seeking alternative water sources. Plans are also being made to carry water tanks aboard helicopters. Barrett Lake has shrunk from 96% of capacity in 2006 to less than 6% today. Lake Sutherland is at 8.5% capacity, and Lake Morena, a reservoir that was drained intentionally by the City of San Diego for drinking water, is below 3% of its capacity. Some ponds and swimming holes have dried up completely. While many rural residents do have water tanks and hoses to help firefighters on the ground battling blazes, helicopters must rely on natural water sources and reservoirs to scoop up water for fighting wildfires. With tinder-dry brush across the backcountry in this fourth season of historic drought, lack of water only exacerbates an already serious situation, and we should all do our part to conserve our precious water resources. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Barena with a Crime Beat report. The Sheriff's Department wants your help to identify a woman who robbed a pharmacy at gunpoint in Santee early Tuesday morning. The woman entered a CVS store in the 9700 block of Mission Gorge Road around 4:30 a.m. Witnesses say the suspect pulled out a pistol and demanded Percocet, a drug, and threatened to shoot the clerk if the demands were not met. Once the woman was given the Percocet, she walked out of the store. No one was hurt. The suspect is described as a woman in her 20s or 30s, possibly of Middle Eastern or Hispanic descent, with dark hair. She stands between 5'4 and 5'7 and weighs between 140 to 160 pounds. The suspect was wearing a black sweatshirt with the word pink written on it, black pants, and black UGG-style boots. The suspect used a semi-automatic pistol with a silver slide and black receiver. You can view photos in the Crime Beat section on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you recognize the woman or know where she is, contact Sheriff's Detective Chris Cotra at 619-956-4057. You can also call the Crime Stoppers anonymous tip line at 888-580-8477. A reward of up to $1,000 is being offered for information that leads to an arrest.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Ed Barena with the Crime Beat Report. A terrifying ordeal experienced by an elderly college area man points to the dangers of finding love online. The 74-year-old man who answered a personal ad on Craigslist seeking a date got a shock, literally. At 1:15 a.m. Tuesday, the suspect showed up at the victim's home on El Cerrito Drive. He used a taser on the elderly man, tied him up, and robbed him, 10 News reports. According to San Diego police officer Dino Delimitros, the suspect is white, 5'8" tall, with a thin build, and wore a gray cap. If you have any information, please contact the San Diego police.
Just in time for Equal Pay Day on April 14th, the Nonprofit Institute for Women's Policy Research has released a new report showing that women have higher rates of poverty and much lower rates of business ownership than men in all 50 states, despite having made significant progress over the last 25 years in attaining a college education. This trend is especially pronounced among the youngest workers. Millennial women are considerably more likely than their male counterparts to have a bachelor's degree or higher. 36.3% of women have a bachelor's degree, compared with only 28.3% of those millennial men. And yet, millennial women have lower earnings than men in all but one state and higher rates of poverty than millennial men in every state in the nation. The report analyzed 4 indicators to create the Poverty and Opportunity Composite Index: educational attainment, business ownership, poverty, and access to health insurance coverage. Overall, the status of women with respect to poverty and opportunity has worsened in the majority of states in the last decade, though in 21 states and the District of Columbia, women's status in these areas has improved. Heidi Hartman, president of the Institute for Women's Policy Research,
says despite their significant educational progress, women remain more economically vulnerable than men, and this is especially true for millennials who represent the future of our labor market and economy. She adds, the inequality between women's and men's wages and their differential poverty rates at all ages and educational levels is a significant part of the income inequality story that is not being told. Across the United States, 15.5% of all women live in poverty, compared with 11.9% of men. Native American, Black, and Hispanic women are all more than twice as likely to live in poverty as white women. The poverty rate is highest among Native American women at over 28%. If all working women received equal pay with men who were of the same age, have the same level of education, and work the same number of hours, and have the same urban-rural status, the report concludes that the poverty rate for working women in the United States would be cut by more than half, declining from 8.1% to 3.9%. Today, women are slightly more likely than men to hold bachelor's degrees, but women's educational access is not distributed equally across racial and ethnic groups or by region. Only 1 in 6 Hispanic and Native American women hold a bachelor's degree, compared with nearly half of Asian Pacific Islander women and 1 in 3 white women. 1 in 3 Hispanic women has less than a high school diploma, which is more than 4 times the share of white women without a high school diploma. Barbara Galt, the vice president and executive director of IWPR, concludes, the persistent wage gap, even for women with bachelor's degrees, in addition to high female poverty rates and lack of educational access for Hispanic, Black, and Native American women, all point to the need for gender and race-sensitive approaches to addressing income inequality. The report also finds that women in the United States own a much smaller share of businesses than men. The proportion of women-owned businesses in the United States increased marginally, from 26% to 28.8% between 1997 and 2007, the most recent year for which federal data is available. The report finds substantial increase in women's health insurance coverage, however, following the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. From 2008 to 2014, the percentage of women ages 18 to 24 without health insurance decreased by over a third. Uninsurance rates for women of all ages dropped 18.5%, from 13% of women lacking insurance in 2008 to just over 10% in the first 9 months of 2014. Poverty rates also vary considerably depending on whether women and men have children or not. Single mothers have the highest rates of poverty in every single state, compared with married men and women, single men, and women without children, as well as single fathers. Nationally, 43% of households headed by single mothers are living in poverty. That is nearly twice the poverty rate of households headed by single fathers, and nearly 3 times the rate of poverty of single women without children. If working single mothers in the United States received equal pay, the very high poverty rates for families with a working single mother would be cut nearly in half, the study found. More data on poverty and opportunity among women can be found at statusofwomendata.org. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
Federal income taxes are due on April 15th, but millions of taxpayers trying to get questions answered from the Internal Revenue Service are finding frustration instead. 5 years of congressional budget slashing have left the agency severely understaffed. The Washington Post reports that so far this year, 5 million callers have been automatically disconnected when a toll-free helpline for the IRS became overloaded. Nationwide, only 40% of callers have been able to reach an actual person, only to find that customer service agents can only offer information on getting tax forms, not technical advice about your tax situation or how you can arrange payments. Even IRS Commissioner John Koskinen admits that the customer service is abysmal, AP reports. Ironically, despite the federal deficit, eliminating 5,000 agents at the IRS means $2 billion in revenues owed to the government won't be collected, the IRS estimates. It's a tax cheater's paradise. So who's to blame? Since 2010, Republicans in Congress have gutted the IRS budget by $1.2 billion, or about 17%, in part as retaliation for the perceived targeting of conservative nonprofits claiming tax exemptions for political activities. At a congressional hearing, Representative Andrew Crenshaw, Republican from Florida, admitted, "We deliberately lowered IRS funding to a level that will make the IRS think twice about what you're doing and why you're doing it." The cuts come at a particularly bad time for the IRS, which is required to help assure compliance with the Affordable Care Act's subsidies and battle an increase in identity theft. Yet despite the cuts, the agency has become more efficient by one measure, processing 11% more returns than before the Budget Acts fell. The cuts have led to frustration among many taxpayers who wait in hours-long lines at IRS customer service centers, all too often leaving without being able to get questions answered or concerns cleared up as a tax deadline looms. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, my very special guest is Megan Hamilton, and she is the chair of the Ocean Friendly Gardens Committee with the Surfrider San Diego Foundation. Megan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Miriam. Pleasure to be here.
The concept of an ocean-friendly garden doesn't mean you have to live on the ocean. I understand that you can have an ocean-friendly garden right here in East County.
Yes, an ocean-friendly garden is not only going to conserve water, but it's going to help water quality.
Conserving water, of course, is a big deal right now as we're entering our fourth year of drought. The governor has ordered all cities and counties to have mandatory water conservation of 25%. This is a historic order. And in addition, this week, the Metropolitan Water Authority has announced that it is going to be cutting water allocations to its customers, including San Diego. So we don't yet know the full impact that's going to have on all of the water districts across East County and the San Diego region, but obviously there's a big need for everybody to conserve water. So how much of water consumption in San Diego County is used outdoors for gardens, lawns, and landscaping?
Miriam, it's actually a shocking fact, but the average household uses 50% of the potable water for landscaping. That water has come from Colorado or Northern California. It's treated for drinking, and we are using it to water our landscapes.
And here in East County, where the properties tend to be larger than a lot of the small ones on the coast or the urban areas, it's probably even more than 50%. So what are some of the things that people can do to use less water in their landscaping?
Yeah, there is a real shift going on right now in terms of landscaping. Ocean Friendly Gardens is promoting moving towards native plants rather than grass. Mm-hmm. So grass requires watering every day or every other day, requires a lot of maintenance, requires pesticides. And native plants, however, use 30% less, and they allow for water to permeate on the site. And they also look beautiful. They provide habitat for wildlife.
Right. There's butterflies and bees.
There's a lot of changes going on how these gardens are designed.
Yeah, when we talk about, you know, water-safe landscaping, xeriscaping, native landscaping, it isn't just cacti. I think there's a misperception out there that you're going to look like the desert if you rip out your lawn and put in water-wise landscaping. What are some of the more interesting options that people can choose?
Yes, I think the xeriscaping or water-wise landscaping got a bit of a bad rep at some point, and not everybody likes cactus, especially if you brush past them. But this, as probably many East County residents know, there is many like chaparral plants, coastal sage scrub that flowers, looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it can be integrated with your existing trees that are already established that don't actually require a lot of water. So it may be just like little baby steps that you can start taking to change how your landscape looks and
right.
what it uses.
And certainly there are some resources for that. I know here in East County, the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College has a lot of examples that you can actually go through, walk. The tours are free. You can go through and take a look and actually see what different types of water-wise landscaping looks like. Do you have other resources you could refer
to? Yeah, there are so many resources available. It's just a matter of getting on the internet. I know the California Native Plant Society recently held their garden tour, so keeping an eye on when those garden tours, the master gardeners also provide a lot of information. As part of the ocean-friendly gardens, we're looking at trying to retain water that naturally falls as rainfall on your site.
Yeah, so what are some ways you can do that? Rain barrels, for example.
Rain barrels are a great option. If you have a rain gutter and rain spout, they can be placed and capture the rainwater. So for every 1 inch of rain that falls on, say, a 1,000-square-foot roof, You can get 600 gallons.
That's a lot of water.
So it starts to add up. That water can be used to supplement during the drier summer months.
What does a rain barrel cost to set up?
The smaller ones that I'm more familiar with in the urban area, they're about 60 gallons. They cost about $70. However, there is a rebate program that you can find either through your local water district or even through California Water. And basically, it ended up just being the tax on the kit.
So basically, it's free other than paying the sales tax? Really?
Exactly.
I want to go get one. There you go. Or a couple. Can you get more than one? Or is it a limit?
I think it was, there was a limit of up to, and I don't recall. I ended up with four rain barrels. So
is there a guideline for how many you need based on how large your house might be?
Well, that's the type of calculation that you can do. There's resources on site that show you how to calculate how much runoff is coming from your roof and looking at the different slopes and where it's going.
And this is free water once you've got the system.
This is
certainly, it's a lot better than paying the water authority or the water district. At the rates that water is going, you're going to be charged a lot if you're using more than your share. What about for people who want to take out grass, if they want to put in some kind of hardscaping? I understand there's ways to do that, right and wrong, from your point of view.
Yeah, hardscaping does have to have a lot of thought into it, because when we're talking about capturing rainfall, whether it's in rainwater barrels or just retaining it on site, if you have a hard surface, it's just going to run off, just like it would be if it was concrete.
Yeah.
So the paving stones, where there's gaps, or permeable concrete, or
tiling and sand, things like that.
Exactly. So you don't want to just create a surface that's going to just let the water run off your site, so you can let it drain into your soil.
Yeah, and it's important, especially in the rural areas, to let it drain back down into the water table there. And in our rural areas, we have people who are dependent on well water, and if the aquifer dries up, it's gone. There's no water.
Replenishing the groundwater is definitely one of the benefits. And you're also, the soil naturally cleans pollutants. So if it just runs off, it does end up in our rivers and down to our beaches. And it's no surprise that many beach closures happen at river mouths. So
yeah,
making a difference upstream,
especially
really
if people have used pesticides on their lawns or herbicides to kill the weeds, you don't want that stuff. If you use it at all, which I personally don't, but if you use it, you certainly don't want that running off
straight
into the
away.
Rivers
exactly.
And into the ocean. How about sprinklers? If people want to go to a more efficient way of watering what landscaping they have, what can they do? And are there rebates out there to help with that?
Yeah, changing the landscape, your, say, grass to a native garden, it is a big project, but there are some smaller steps you can take. And taking a look at your current watering system and seeing that, is it overrunning onto the pavement or sidewalk? Is it watering evenly? And there's new, like, just even a simple fix of, like, replacing the sprinkler valve. There's newer valves that are water efficient. They have larger drops. So instead of the water spraying in finer drops and being blown by the wind and evaporating, it reaches where it needs to reach, which is your garden.
Yeah, and then there's also things like drip irrigation or timer systems, things like that, so that you don't have water just running and running and running.
Yeah, adjusting the timer system, especially for the different seasons. You really only need 7 minutes three times a week for grass during the winter months, and it's a maximum of 10 minutes three times a week during the summer.
You know, we should mention, for those that are looking for alternatives to lawn, that there's one big advantage to the native landscaping over the trend now where a lot of people are putting in artificial turf, but they're actually finding that there are some health issues with that. There's actually certain kinds of cancer that they're finding. They're linked to kids playing on artificial turf, for example, depending on the type. So,
yeah, ocean-friendly gardens, we do not support the artificial turf, and again, it's because it's not allowing for that permeability.
Yeah.
And we really want the individual properties to retain their water on site.
And it retains heat. It
retains
plastic,
heat,
basically.
Yeah. And compacts soil, too. So the soil dies, and we want a live soil.
Yeah. What about people who have trees that they just maybe can't afford to water anymore? It can get very expensive, some of these older properties, where maybe somebody had a small orchard or a number of trees. And yet, you also can't just walk away and not water them, because then you create a fire hazard for yourself and your neighbors. I know in my area in La Mesa and Mount Helix, I've heard firefighters voice very serious concerns about some of the older residents up there that are just letting trees die because they can't afford to water them. What else can they do?
Yeah, that's definitely a good point. We're not encouraging people to let their gardens die, but to make changes, and they can start to make small changes over time. So perhaps having a tree trimmer or tree remover come in, and rather than having to remove all the branches and leaves and debris, have it mulched on site. So now you have a very healthy mulch layer that allows water to retain in site even better and creates a healthy soil, like a sponge soil. So,
good point. And I know that in our rural areas, listeners, many of the fire safe councils have wood chippers that are available free. They have certain days of the month or of the year where you can bring in your branches and trimmings and they will mulch it for you. So that's actually a free service in some places. So check with your fire safe council about that. How about indoor water use? What are some of the things that people can do to reduce their use indoors?
Yeah, so there's, I think, just being conscious of how you're using your water every day, you know, whether you need to flush the toilet every time. And a great fix that I have in my house is a bladder that is put in the toilet cistern. Mm-hmm. So instead of filling up to 1.6 gallons, it only fills up to 1 gallon, and that is plenty. So already I'm saving like half a gallon each time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if everyone does this, it's a lot less expensive than, you know, changing out your whole toilet to a low flush design. Very simple, very quick and effective.
Mm-hmm. I know for showers at our old house, for example, when we were there during the last drought, we would put a bucket in the shower. It took a long time in that house for the water to get warm. And so rather than just stand there watching water go down the drain for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, we would put a bucket there, collect the cold water, and it would fill the bucket, and there would be enough to go out and water the flower bed with that.
Yeah, that's another great idea. Running a dishwasher only when it's full, you know, being conservative in how you wash your clothes, just some things like that. Gray water is another option, but does probably require a plumber to come in and redo your stuff.
Permits too, right? You can't just put one of those in.
There's some good guidelines now, so I think you can actually start do gray water, but it might be best to check with the city or county with their rules.
Is there anything else that you would like to add that you would like our listeners here in East County and across San Diego to know about the Gardens Committee, the Ocean Friendly Gardens Project, or in general what people here can do to help preserve our oceans?
I would like to mention a really great resource that will be coming out. It's based from San Diego County, and it's Sustainable Landscape Guidelines. It's going to be free. It's created, prepared under a Proposition 84 grant with 7 partners, including Surfrider. And it's going to have so much information, including, you know, the wildland-urban interface for firewise plants.
Very nice.
And how to just transform your lawn into a beautiful native garden.
Marvelous. It is worth mentioning that if you're changing out your landscaping, in addition to being water-wise, make sure the plants are fire-wise. We made the mistake at our old house. We had a slope stability problem there, and we wanted to get landscaping that would be not water-intensive onto that slope. And unfortunately, the landscaper we used recommended a bunch of acacias, and we later found out that those are terrible from a fire standpoint. They're very flammable. So it's a good idea to ask and make sure that whatever you're getting is good for both. There's lots of plants that are. Again, the Water Conservation Garden, and you can go to the California Native Plant Society, as you've mentioned. And then if people want additional information on your website, Megan, where do they find Surfrider and information about ocean-friendly gardens?
So the surfridersd.org is the main site, and then there is the Ocean Friendly Gardens, and you can check that for any workshops we have. We have hands-on workshops where we actually implement a native garden. It's a lot of fun. I encourage any East County residents to come out to the next one. We haven't got one scheduled right now. We're actually working really hard on curb cuts, and that's looking at diverting runoff and rainwater into native gardens from the streets. So,
very nice. And I understand you're using curb cuts at a school. That's something maybe that if you're educators or teachers out there, that might be something worth doing at other schools around the area, as well as in your own neighborhood.
It's a pilot project, and we hope to get the city and county interested in this very simple solution where we can actually utilize water that is falling out of the sky rather than water that's coming from Colorado or Northern California.
Very good. Listeners, if you've just tuned in, we've been speaking with Megan Hamilton. She is the chair of the Ocean Friendly Gardens Committee at Surfrider San Diego. Megan, thank you so much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Miriam.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, but many people are not aware of a nonprofit organization called Home Start. Home Start works to prevent and treat child abuse by addressing conditions that can contribute to risky or abusive situations. Conditions including poverty, unsafe neighborhoods, lack of affordable housing, and unemployment. They also help people attain self-sufficiency. Doors were being shut on Deanne Todd and her five children, and she was running out of places to turn. One unexpected twist in a relationship threatened everything she had worked for, leaving her family without a place to call home. The situation was turning desperate until she came across Home Start, a discovery that has turned everything around for her struggling family. Home Start is a nonprofit child abuse prevention and treatment agency funded in part by the County of San Diego's Health and Human Services Agency and First Five San Diego. Todd says the Home Start workers are like angels. She adds, "I went to so many different homeless shelters and they all said no. And if Home Start hadn't taken us in, we would have been on the concrete somewhere." Instead, Deanne and her children, an 11-year-old son, 7-year-old triplets, and a 1-year-old daughter, have an apartment. Now Deanne has two jobs and goes to school, and the family is in the process of transitioning off public assistance. It's a big change from where they were several months ago. She had started dating a man who turned out to have a dark side he kept hidden from her, and that led to her eviction from the condo where she and her children had been living for nearly 2 years. Deanne says of the ordeal, "I was working and going to school, and I had no idea he was being watched by law enforcement or the other lifestyle he had. It was total shock and surprise when all that happened." The homeowners association told her she was a good tenant, but her lease wouldn't be renewed because of the police involvement with the man she was dating. The landlord gave the family 60 days to move. That started a spiral of incidents in which Deanne and her children would run into one obstacle after another in search of a place to call home. Stays with relatives didn't work out. Shelters were full. At one point, she falsely told the residential treatment program that she smoked weed and drank liquor just so they could stay there, since it is easier to find shelter if you seek treatment than if you are clean and sober. Then her cousin learned about the Home Start program. Deanne Todd went to an orientation for Home Start and qualified for the program. Home Start began paying for hotel vouchers, which allowed Todd to start saving up some money for basic necessities and prepare to get a place. She found a landlord willing to take her and her children despite the eviction. Home Start expedited the process and helped pay Deanne's deposit and first month's rent. At that time, she was working part-time in a hair salon, shampooing and doing other small services. It was a job, but it didn't pay much. Then as soon as she moved into the new place, she found a job. She says, "I was able to settle down, settle in, and focus." Before, she recalls, her children were stressed out and their grades dropped in school. They didn't have enough time to do homework with the bus and trolley schedule. Now the kids' test scores have gone from a D average to a B average. Deanne is a customer service representative at a call center and still picks up work at the hair salon when time allows. She's been able to save up and get a car so she can get to work. Now she says, "My kids are happy again and we're like a family again." The family now has time to spend together, cooking and eating dinners, for example. Most importantly, Deanne concludes, "We have peace of mind. We're safe. We're secure. When no one else would help us, Home Start did, and I am forever grateful." To learn more about the Home Start program, visit www.home-start.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Ed Barrena.
City Councilman Todd Gloria announced Tuesday that he will run for the 78th Assembly District next year at the end of his council term, Times of San Diego reports. Assembly Speaker Tony Atkins, who currently holds the seat, will be leaving office due to term limits. Gloria said in an email to supporters, "I was truly humbled to serve as interim mayor of San Diego and to begin the process of restoring your trust in our city government. Together we have stabilized the city's budget, advocated for housing, protected our environment, and stood up for working families. I want to continue that progress as San Diego's voice in our state capital." Gloria describes himself as the proud son of a maid and a gardener who worked hard to give their son opportunity. He's been mentioned as a possible candidate for mayor in 2016, but in setting his sights on the state assembly, he will face interim city councilman and lifeguard Ed Harris, who announced his candidacy last November. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now is the time to stand up against domestic violence. That's the message county officials and three well-known local athletes are urging in a new public service announcement that has begun airing on Time Warner and Cox Communications cable channels. Professional skater Tony Hawk, San Diego Chargers linebacker Melvin Ingram, and BMX champion Elise Post joined San Diego County District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis, Sheriff Bill Gore, and Supervisor Dave Roberts in the ads. Recent statistics reinforce the need for this reminder. Nearly 17,000 domestic violence incidents were reported in San Diego County in 2013, an increase of 2% over the year before. Sheriff Gore says, "Everyone has the right to be safe. If you are a victim of domestic violence, protect yourself by seeking assistance." Domestic violence is the willful intimidation, physical assault, battery, sexual assault, and/or other abusive behavior perpetrated by an intimate partner against another. It affects individuals in every community, regardless of age, economic status, race, religion, nationality, or educational background. A sampling of 100 domestic violence cases investigated by the San Diego Sheriff's Department in 2013 indicated that children were present in 37% of these incidents. Supervisor Dave Roberts notes, "Domestic violence can happen in any neighborhood and bring crisis to any family. Victims need to know they are not alone and that help is readily available." During 2014, the District Attorney's Office issued nearly 500 domestic violence felony cases and over 1,000 misdemeanor-related cases. DA Bonnie Dumanis says her office's Family Protection Division holds abusers responsible and also works to support and protect victims. The office recently added a high-risk review team to evaluate the most serious cases and try to prevent domestic violence from escalating. If you or someone you know is being abused, call the San Diego Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-888-DV-LINKS. That's 1-888-385-4657. The hotline is answered by trained counselors 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It is bilingual, confidential, and referrals may be provided for services in every region of the county. It offers information such as domestic violence shelter bed availability, counseling referrals, batterers treatment information, and assistance with safety planning. However, if you are in immediate danger, call 911. The DA's office also offers services to victims and witnesses of all types of crimes. For a complete list of services offered, you can go to the DA office's online website. Assistance is provided from the moment the crime occurs for as long as assistance is needed. You can also visit the Sheriff's Department webpage on domestic violence at sdsheriff.net/dv. It includes warning signs of an abusive relationship and a video demonstration on how to get a restraining order. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Ed Barena.
Book lovers will find an array of authors appearing at a special event at the Barnes & Noble in Grossmont Center this Saturday, April 11th at 4 p.m. The event is titled Romancing San Diego 2.0 and will feature an author panel as well as book signings. Featured celebrity guest Deborah Pratt is a noted author, 5-time Emmy nominee, and co-executive producer and head writer of the award-winning science fiction series Quantum Leap. She will be signing copies of her paranormal romance novels The Age of Eve and The Tempting, Seducing the Nephilim. Also appearing at this event are historical fiction author and co-organizer Georgie Lee, along with local authors Juliette Sobonet, Terry Irene Blaine, Kathy Ahrens, S.J. Harper, Teresa Carpenter, Lisa Kessler, and others. The authors will also be taking questions during a discussion preceding the book signing.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting for Leon Thompson, who's on vacation. This week's Destination East County includes the Morning Glory Brunch and Frog Race, a camel dairy tour, and the world-famous Romero's Family Guitarist live in concert.
We'll also have a preview of coming attractions, including the Lakeside Rodeo and opening night of the Cajon Classic Cruises. So stay tuned for all of these events and more.
The 17th Annual Morning Glory Brunch will be held on April 11th at St. Madeline Sophie's Center in El Cajon. This event benefits the center's programs for adults with developmental disabilities. The brunch features a springtime ambiance and a beautiful organic garden, along with food and beverages from over 20 local restaurants, art, work from St. Madeline students and local artists, live music and entertainment, silent and Chinese auctions, and the ever-popular Great Frog Race. For brunch tickets or to reserve your Frog Race entry, you can visit stmsc.org, as in St. Madeline's Sophie Center.
Julian, San Diego's historic gold community, hosts A Taste of Julian on April 11th from 1 to 5 p.m. This rural dining adventure features a self-guided culinary tour of restaurants, wineries, and breweries. Tickets are available at the Julian Town Hall at 2129 Main Street, along with your map of participating restaurants, wineries, and breweries. For details or tickets, visit julianca.com.
The Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona invites you to an open farm tour on April 11th and 12th from 1 to 4 p.m. An animal show featuring the Camel Dairy's entertaining residents will be staged at 1:30, after which you can enjoy camel rides, camel petting, and photos with the camels. For more information, visit cameldairy.com.
Saturday, April 11th is Sweet Pea Day at Summers Past Farms in Flint Springs, just east of El Cajon. This annual event celebrates fragrant, old-fashioned sweet pea flowers in full glory. Arrive early for this popular occasion. Gates open at 9 a.m. and cutting your own bouquets in a beautiful sweet pea maze starts at 11 a.m. While the blossoms last, you can also enjoy live music and snacks at a coffee bar or bring a picnic to enjoy on the grass. Find out more at summerspastfarms.com.
The City of La Mesa will host April Pools Day on April 11th from 12 to 3 p.m. at the La Mesa Community Pool to promote water safety. Activities include swimming lessons, water safety and CPR presentations, synchronized swimming and water polo demonstrations, and a mock rescue by city lifeguards and the fire department. April Pools Day is a free event for the whole family, so bring your swimsuits.
The Julian Family Fiddle Camp will be held at Camp Cedar Glen, April 8th to the 12th. It's a music camp for folks of all ages and levels wanting to improve their skills on fiddle, mandolin, guitar, or old-time banjo. Some of the most renowned North American artists serve as faculty, with attendees coming from across the U.S. as well as abroad. Tents and RVs are allowed, with evening concerts for the public on Friday, April 10th, and Saturday, April 11th, at 7 p.m. For more information, visit familyfiddlecamp.com.
Flash Jam is an annual gathering of musicians who converge in front of Julian's Town Hall to play a trio of traditional old-time fiddle tunes on April 12th at 2 p.m. The event draws acoustic string musicians of all ages and abilities from far and near, with hundreds coming to fill the town with music. After the first round of tunes at the Town Hall, the musicians move to several other locations along Main Street to repeat their performance.
Three generations of the famous Romero's family will perform a guitar music concert on Sunday, April 12th at 2 p.m. at the Poway Center for the Performing Arts. The Romero's have performed for dignitaries around the world, including the President of the United States, His Royal Majesty of Spain, and Pope John Paul II at the Vatican. You can also opt to dine under the stars before the show with a gourmet meal catered by Cafe Merlot. For more information or tickets, visit powayarts.org. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Yeehaw! The 51st Annual Lakeside Rodeo takes place on April 17th through 19th. The event features Western-style entertainment and events including bronc riding, barrel racing, steer wrestling, roping competitions, bull riding, and for youngsters, stick horse riding. As added attractions, world champion trick roper Ryder Keisner will be performing. In addition, the Budweiser Clydesdale horses will make an appearance at some rodeo performances. For tickets and information, you can visit lakesiderodeo.com.
The City of La Mesa invites you to Fun with Physics Day on Saturday, April 18th from 9 a.m. to noon at the La Mesa Boys and Girls Teen Club in Highwood Park. Experiments include bubbles, sink or float, dry ice experiments, barges, and more. For more information, visit lamesaparks.org.
Get ready to rev up! Cajon Classic Cruises is rolling out its 2015 season starting Wednesday, April 22nd with a full street closure for opening night. The cruises will continue all summer long on Wednesday nights from 5 to 8 p.m. The second week, April 29th, will celebrate Cinco de Mayo. Other highlights include Jimmy Johnson Night, a military tribute, and Thunder on Main Street. For the full Cajon Classic Cruises season lineup, You can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Rock and roll superstar Chubby Checker will perform a concert with a twist on April 23rd at 8 p.m. in Sequoia's Live and Up Close Theater. Checker rocketed to fame in 1960 when his recording of The Twist was the number one song in the nation, sparking a new dance craze and variations such as the Peppermint Twist and Twist and Shout. He is the only artist ever to have 5 albums in the top 12 at one time and the only artist to have a song hit number one twice, The Twist. He won a Grammy for Best Rock Performance and went on to record more hit songs such as Limbo Rock, attracting a new generation of fan. For tickets, visit sequon.com.
Friends of East County Arts will host a garden tour on Saturday, April 25th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The tour features 5 gardens with an amazing variety of settings, including water-wise gardens, themed gardens, flowering plants, and a one-acre rose garden, plus vendors offering crafts and garden creations. Friends of East County Arts is a nonprofit philanthropic organization that supports the performing and fine arts in East County. For garden tour tickets, visit friendsofecarts.org. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions here in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
San Diego's Serial Inebriate Program, or SIP, is gaining national attention. The program was developed by Mental Health Systems, a San Diego-based nonprofit, and the San Diego Police Department to address the issue of chronic homelessness. The nonprofit was recently tapped to help the cities of San Francisco, Las Vegas, New Orleans, Jersey City, New Jersey, and Billings, Montana, to develop strategies to better manage the needs of their homeless populations. SIP program manager Denny McLagan says our clients go from sleeping in the streets to sweeping up the streets. He says that methods utilized to break the cycle of homelessness have been proven time and time again, adding, "We're encouraged that other cities across the country are taking an interest in mirroring the serial inebriate program and proactively addressing this important issue." The SIP program was developed in partnership with San Diego law enforcement, emergency medical services, hospitals, and courts. Mental Health Systems says SIP provides a cost-effective solution to the revolving door practices commonly used to deal with the chronic homeless alcoholics. By offering these individuals treatment instead of jail, SIP provides intensive case management and access to services needed to achieve financial stability and long-term recovery. San Diego Police Chief Shelley Zimmerman praises the SIP program, noting that the long-term solution it provides have proven to be effective and have a positive impact on the community. In diverting San Diego's chronically homeless away from hospital emergency rooms and into qualified care, the SIP program has resulted in a 54% reduction in emergency medical services among the region's homeless population and a savings of more than $70,000 per month in health care costs, according to San Diego State University's Institute for Public Health. In traveling to other cities, Mental Health Systems and other advocates share experiences of success in dealing with this segment of the population. The 25 Cities Initiative has also spurred national interest in solving the issues of chronic homelessness. Led by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA, the program focuses on 25 communities, including San Diego, and aims to solve the issue of veteran homelessness. McLagan concludes, "I've always told our clients, if you aren't totally satisfied with our services, we will cheerfully refund your misery. Thankfully, we haven't had to give too many refunds." Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barena.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. Pope Francis, on a flight to Rome, declared to reporters, In September, God willing, I will canonize Junipero Serra in the United States. In other words, the Pope intends to make Junipero Serra a Roman Catholic saint. When Father Junipero Serra, with a battalion of Spanish soldiers, built a mission near Kumeyaay Bay in 1769, there were around 300,000 indigenous people living in California. Serra was the founder of 9 Roman Catholic missions from San Diego's Mission de Alcala to San Francisco. Serra's accomplishment is hailed as the origin story for California, filled with grand deeds. It is said that Serra performed a miracle by curing a nun in St. Louis of lupus. While beatification requires a miracle, the next step, canonization or sainthood, requires a second miracle. But Pope Francis, a fellow Jesuit, made an exception, calling Serra a holy man and a great evangelizer. Serra baptized nearly 6,000 Indians. It was for Serra's great evangelizing that Pope Francis points to as qualifying him as a saint. However, Junipero Serra is no saint to indigenous people. He viewed the indigenous tribes as heathens who desperately needed the gospel, but the indigenous people of California paid a high price for their conversion. The missions were built with Indian slave labor. Their ancient food supplies dwindled. Smallpox, measles, plagues, and other diseases spiked as they came together in these tight concentrations and their numbers plummeted. According to author and historian Robert Jackson, given a native population collapse in the Spanish Catholic missions of Alta California, any Indian person consigned to or born in a mission had been pretty much given a death sentence. The massive destruction of the original nations and peoples of California is the reason why there ought to be a mourning rather than a celebration associated with the ship San Salvador and the Spanish Catholic mission system. Stephen Newcomb, co-founder of the Indigenous Law Institute, wrote, "Pope Francis and the Vatican are going to celebrate the deadly and unsaintly Spanish Catholic mission system by bestowing sainthood on Junipero Serra. What does that say about a religion and a society when it pretends that a tradition of dehumanization and brutal domination is a tradition of virtue and saintliness? The same institute that brought us the Crusades, a Borgia Pope, and the Inquisition is now going to sanctify Serra's legacy." Father Manuel Tony Diaz, the administrator of the San Gabriel mission founded in 1771 by Serra, said his joyous reaction to the announcement of the Padre's canonization was tempered by the knowledge that some of his own parishioners look upon Serra as a reminder of a lost or frayed tribal history. At the time when Juan Cabrillo sailed into Kumeyaay Bay, the Kumeyaay Nation had a complex way of living off the land, migrating from the coast to the foothills every year to follow the food supply, cultivating and harvesting staples and weaving elaborate baskets to store and carry their goods. They manipulated the chaparral with fire to produce more food to pick and animals to hunt. Cattle ranching and sheep grazing by the Europeans led to the collapse of the traditional Kumeyaay economy, aided by a later law banning the Indians from burning the landscape. Those who converted were forced to drop their old ways and eat, dress, and act like the Europeans. Public Broadcasting produced an alarming documentary on Serra and the mission system. They had this to say. Despite the frequent conflicts between military and religious authority for Alta California's Indians, the missions and their Franciscan administrators were part and parcel of an enormous destructive colonization process. The Spanish, largely through disease, were responsible for a population decline from about 300,000 Indians in 1769 to about 200,000 by 1821. The strenuous work regime and high population density within the missions themselves also caused high death rates among the mission Indians. By law, all baptized Indians subjected themselves completely to the authority of the Franciscans. They could be whipped, shackled, or imprisoned for disobedience and hunted down if they fled the mission grounds. Indian recruits, who were often forced to convert nearly at gunpoint, could be expected to survive mission life for only about 10 years. As one friar noted, "The Indians live well free, but as soon as we reduce them to a Christian and community life, they fatten, sicken, and die." In Junipero Serra's defense, Gregory Orfalea, who wrote a biography of Serra, said, "When the Kumeyaay sacked the San Diego Mission in 1775, killing three Spaniards, the viceroy captured about a dozen Indians and called for their execution. But Serra called for the prisoners' release and pleaded their case to the viceroy in a letter in which he wrote, 'As to the killers, let them live so that he can be saved. For that is the purpose of our coming here and its sole justification.'" In doing so, Orfalea says Serra modeled his life on the gospel of love, not a desire for land or gold. And in this way, he was different from Columbus, who enslaved and tortured Caribbean natives in his quest for precious metals. Orfalea said Pope Francis' decision was no surprise. A Jesuit who took the name after the saint and founder of the Franciscan order, Francis does not believe in Catholicism confined to the ivory tower. Serra was a kindred spirit who abandoned a high-profile academic post to take on the dangerous, austere life of a missionary. Ruben Mendoza, coordinator of California Mission Archaeology at Cal State Monterey Bay, says the canonization is long overdue. "I've always felt the canonization process was stymied through misinformation and politicalization and laying blame and onus on one individual who was actually in constant conflict with the governors and military commanders in New Spain over how they were treating the Indians." He and others said Serra fought efforts to enslave the Indians, and whippings were not limited to natives, but a common method of discipline in the Spanish Empire. Steve Newcomb concludes, "The fact remains that the Juan Cabrillo ship San Salvador was built with the spent lives of Indians and crushing Indian slave labor. The 21 Spanish Catholic missions were also built with Indian slave labor and resulted in a genocidal-level population collapse among the native nations of the geographical area known as California." Ron Andrade, executive director of the Los Angeles City and County Native American Indian Commission, compared Junipero Serra to the Spanish conquistadors who subjugated South America. Andrade, a Luiseno Indian from the La Jolla Band of Kumeyaay, said Serra decimated the Indian population. "Everywhere they put a mission, the majority of Indians are gone," Andrade said, "and Serra knew what they were doing. They were taking the land, taking the crops. He knew the soldiers were raping women, and he turned his head." Many tribes, including the Luiseno, the Juaneño, and the Gabrielino, survived the mission era through partial integration with each other and Spanish culture, but others fled inland or lost their culture completely, Andrade said. The choice of Serra for canonization is especially unfortunate given the Catholic Church has been making its first attempts at reconciliation with some of California's indigenous people who experienced devastating losses due to the colonial system Serra ushered in. On December 22, 2012, Bishop Richard Garcia of the Monterey Diocese offered the Ama Mutsin tribal band apologies from the church. He invited people to a massive reconciliation between the church and tribal members at Mission San Juan Bautista. In other former missions, tribal communities have sought reconciliation for the trauma their ancestors experienced, wounds that often remain open today. The selection of Junipero Serra as a saint seems antithetical to the current emphasis on and need for reconciliation.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.